Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. It is risk-off this morning. Stocks on track for the first three-day loss since mid-September as daily global COVID cases hit a new record. Europe introduces new lockdowns, hospitalizations in this country near a two-month high. And stimulus hopes remain thin. Jobless claims go the wrong direction, up 53K. Our roadmap begins with stimulus hopes fading as the Treasury Secretary talks to CNBC moments ago.
Plus, shares of Morgan Stanley are slightly lower, it would appear, ahead of the open. The bank did top revenue estimates by $1 billion on what was stronger than expected trading revenues. And EV price war, Elon Musk cutting the cost of Tesla's models, Model S, for a second time in 1 week, Carl.
Meantime, guys, got to take stock of this sell-off here in the pre-market, Jim. General take this morning is that the market's now catching up to what we know has been a problem in Europe, and these lockdown restrictions in the UK and France are getting more serious. Dollar strengthening, some believe, because the situation here is at least better than Europe on a relative basis.
Well, I think we're importing their negativity. I don't think that it's necessarily going to last, but you certainly can't make any moves to the positive until about 11 o'clock. When you start seeing their markets peter out. Now, it's one thing. It's very frightening when you read what's going on there because it's so obvious that it's a second wave and it seems more viral. I don't know whether that's just whether that's true or not, but the number of cases are certainly daunting. But I want to warn people that if you follow what they're doing and you sell our stocks because of what's happening right now in France, that's going to prove to be something that you might regret. I was negative going into the bank period because they never, ever do what people want. They always seem to disappoint. And David, it's gotten to the point now where even the good ones, where Morgan Stanley, where Goldman Sachs, which beat by, 80%, ignored. And now today we're working about the Madrid COVID and Paris COVID. Doesn't make sense to me. David, I'm at odds with it.
You're at odds with the fact that what? I'm sorry, that the market should be responding differently to the rising cases or in Europe?
Yes. I mean, we are not Europe.
Right.
Now,
but
we
we're still running 55,000 a day. At least that was the number yesterday. I haven't looked at what that was 2 days ago, yesterday's number. I haven't looked at today's, Jim, but we're not exactly
No,
doing
but
well.
It's I mean, unfortunately, it's terribly consistent. It's not, and people will talk to you about death rate. Very interesting articles these days as we start talking about COVID long, that there's something else besides the death rate that we should worry about. But what I'm saying is that if you look at the fundamentals, look at that Goldman quarter. Study Morgan Stanley.
Strong quarter, Morgan Stanley, which we'll get to also. 15% return on tangible common equity. Say again?
Wells Fargo and Citi were not good.
No, J.P. Morgan was fine. But
it was fine.
To your point, all the banks go down.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, Goldman Sachs, you know, you speak to Steve Scherer. I mean, he's
CFO.
The CFO. It's a rather remarkable quarter. And I think what people call one of the things that people have to recognize is the amount of business that is being done with Zoom is incredible. No face-to-face, just Zoom to Zoom. And it's working. It's not supposed to. But the expense structure is, for a lot of places, is better simply because people don't go anywhere.
I do want to get to that Bernstein call on Zoom later, Jim. They go to 611 on their target. They were way below where it is right now. But Zoom minutes year on year, it shouldn't be surprising, but it's still astounding, up 30x. I mean, that's a reflection of our daily lives, of course, what's happened over the last 8 months.
Look, Zoom is a remarkable company. There was competition. Look, RingCentral's competition, WebEx, Cisco competition. They didn't work because Zoom is business to business and business to consumer. That's highly unusual. Eric Yuan is an amazing executive. He's an exuberant individual. He has he's a 24/7 soul who is thinking every minute about how to make Zoom into something even bigger. How about this? How about what he did with DocuSign? You watch Zoom and you can sign a deal. How smart was that? I believe he's going to start getting, we'll start seeing things that make it so that Zoom can be worldwide. Translation like you have with Google. It's a remarkable product and it's working. Now, is this Fastly? a company that underperformed after being hyped up $20 by forces that are unknown? No, this is a company that it's very hard to value, 50 times sales. It's very hard to value because the sales exponential.
Wait, Zoom is hard to value or
very
Fastly?
Hard.
Let's talk about Fastly for a moment because you've used it as a reflection of speculative excess
Roth,
to a certain extent. And to the presence, of course, which we welcome, of the new traders in this market,
right.
Individuals using the Robinhood platform and others, by the way, the E-Trade
people
platform,
Robinhood,
too,
got all,
now
it's,
part
it's
of Morgan
metaphor,
Stanley.
Darn it.
Yesterday, they report, of course, that the revenue numbers are not quite going to be where they were assumed to be because
right.
it would seem they don't name TikTok, but
no,
we can make the assumption that it is, right?
Well, TikTok is
largest customer, Fastly's platform, usage of Fastly's platform by its previously disclosed largest customer did not meet expectations.
Right. And that was a pre-announcement where a lot of people who are not in this business say, what's the difference? They're going to do 74 million and now they're going to do 71. What's the difference? Well, David, when you're valued like that, you have to do 81 to please people. As opposed to Goldman Sachs,
right,
you
of course,
do 10
it's always
got to
be
above. 5.
So does this?
I think
does this reverberate
this.
In the broader market.
I think that's
even
more
though
important
it's not
than what's
that
going on in Milan and Paris. I think there are people who are reassessing right now what happened. How did these stocks get to these levels? And David, you and I both have found it quizzical. The SoftBank calls. You've mentioned them multiple times.
Yeah, the whale. Of course, he calls it Rajiv Misra, who runs the vision, calls it barely a dolphin. But yeah. The SoftBank whale in terms of buying
well,
those calls.
Well, Carl, there are some stocks. Will you go over them? I'm working on this Fiverr now. I mean, I don't want to play my hand yet because this is the Fiverr. This is the freelance people who come in and they help you with your website. You know, this thing is valued too high. I don't know how to value. I do not know how to value Zoom. And I do not know how to value Snowflake.
Snowflake.
Other than the fact that, wow, are they good companies? What do you do? Carl, there are times where Microsoft, in 1987, Microsoft is like, wow, I mean, I think this company's going to be really big. Intel, when they dropped DRAMs and switched to the 86 processor, went to an astronomical PE. But it was right. You have to grow into the PEs. I think that Eric Yuan is going to grow into the Zoom PE. But I don't want to. For my charitable trust, I wouldn't buy it. It's too high.
Yeah. No, that's what makes some of these early cycle stories, Jim, so difficult is the multiple by very nature is elevated relative to history, and it takes time for the business to fill that gap. I am curious, though, if you're convinced that what's happening in Europe is not going to replicate itself here, why the fresh highs on Zoom today? Why a fresh high on Peloton for the second day in a row today?
Well, there is. Yes. I mean, that is the second wave. But Peloton, obviously, they need a new factory. They can't meet it. Zoom is a recognition that we're not going back. So whoever who doesn't have Zoom, there's a lot of people. There's really two parts of this country. The parts of the country that needs a stimulus. And then the other parts of the company who say, you know what, I'm going to put Zoom in my country house. I'm not going to just put Zoom in my house. There's people who are buying homes at a level that are extraordinary in this country. So, I mean, there's housing's doing well. Autos have now turned around. So there's a lot of good. But those people are doing it remotely. And people are doing remotely. How often when an executive wants to talk with you, like for our show,
yes.
and you're trying to get background, how often do they send you a link now versus picking up the phone?
It happens. People want to actually, it's funny, conversations that would have ordinarily just taken place over the phone, so to speak.
Right.
Now people want to see you. I don't want to see anybody. So
you know?
I just do the audio anyway. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
I always do the Zoom when asked.
Do you really?
I love it.
You love it, yeah.
I think it's fantastic. Carl, I Zoom everybody.
I don't know. The way things have evolved, it used to be you just picked a phone up and called somebody as a reporter and you either got them or didn't. Now you got to make a point. Everybody texts you, are you available? Could you possibly talk at this point? Everybody wants to make an appointment to talk and then it's
ridiculous.
Well,
that's ridiculous. Because we did this thing. We used to go
now they send you links.
Lunch.
I'll send you a link. We can talk.
I had a work dinner last night. I had a good time. It was good. It was social distance. There was nobody around me. It was ice cold. It was everything I want. That's what I want, Carl. No one near me.
That's what we all want, Jim.
Yeah.
I know. I don't want that aerosol spray cough coming in my direction. Nick Saban. Yeah. See, when you read Nick Saban, that Nick Saban got it, Carl, don't you say to yourself, anybody.
Saban, the athletic director, Greg Byrne, LSU Florida's been delayed. Schefter's got a fresh tweet, Jim. I don't know if you've seen it, but the Falcons, according to Adam, closing their facility.
Adam and I have Gage. We have Gage.
Dustin Johnson, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, this thing is, it's impossible to trap.
It is, and every day the NFL changes when it's going to have a game. I'm surprised that Amazon said when they're going to have it. They just say, listen, we're going to have an excess game that's played on a Tuesday. The NFL, I can't believe Schefter had that. We went back and forth today, but it was mostly about how Christian Kirk's a good matchup against the Jaguars.
But all of this doesn't add up to necessarily another lockdown coming here in the United States, Jim. That's not happening.
No, it's not, and that's what matters. I think, Carl, what people are missing is that there will be no lockdown. And anyone like Phil Murphy was not talking about a lockdown. Florida, I just got the right to be able to go to an Eagles game yesterday. 7,000 people have the right to cough on each other, and you know that's what people are doing. They're opening up.
Yeah, Tom Lee's got a piece out this morning, Jim, talking about how hard it is to contain. He does say that he thinks 350 cases per million acts as a governor. Because at that point, policymakers panic, in his words. Citizens start masking up, and caseloads per capita come down. But elasticity on this thing is not infinite, Jim, among policymakers.
No. Look, I mean, it gets science fiction-like as it kind of gets out of control. And all you really want to do is get it last. You want Regeneron. You want to take two Regeneron and go back. And that's a reference to the president calling Lenschleifer's fabulous company like it's a pill. Regeneron's got to give us more. We got to get that Johnson & Johnson. That, you know, Carl, to me, all that you mentioned versus if we hear that the J&J issue is solved. Remember, J&J is capable of doing a billion, okay? They're capable of doing a billion vials. So we have to get that J&J study on track. The Eli Lilly is capable of doing...
You're talking about two different things here where you're going to confuse people. One, again, is an antiviral that you take if you've got it. The other, the J&J, is a vaccine. No, I know, but you shorthand things, and sometimes people need to, you know. The J&J is the vaccine.
Right.
And obviously, the manufacturing for the vaccines continues in the hope that they will be approved at some point in the not-too-distant future, and then you'll have an available supply immediately to start getting out to people.
Right.
And it's obviously Pfizer, Moderna, J&J. You know, there's others. I mean, we could have a number of vaccines available. But between now and then, Jim, the question is, as it gets colder and as we see case counts rising, both in Europe and in the United States, what will be the response, if any? Or are people just going to continue to pull back from economic activity, or are we done? Is everybody just like,
I'll put my mask on,
but I'm going to go about my business?
We're not done. I mean, colleges, some people are coming home. Thanksgiving will be a bit of a frightening time when they come home. But here's something interesting about the NFL. Do you know that almost none of these cases, Carl, are symptomatic? They're almost 100% asymptomatic, which means that people feel bad for a couple days, but they just don't, they're having a hard time taking it seriously because they're not really sick. The rest of us get sick. Those people are supermen. But it's really hurting the NFL that these people do not show any signs of COVID. And that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Falcons.
Guys, a lot to get to this morning. We'll get to Morgan Stanley, as David mentions, UAL. McMillan from Walmart talking about Black Friday stimulus and TikTok even. And we'll talk more about Facebook and Twitter as they apologize in some ways for their restrictions of content regarding that New York Post Hunter Biden story. Futures of Week, we're back in a minute. New York Times with a story last night by Kay Kelly and Mark Mazzetti talking about the day that Larry Kudlow came on our air, February 25, and said that the COVID pandemic was not contained airtight, but pretty close to airtight, as the Times now says that the administration was giving private briefings to some investors and people affiliated with the Hoover Institution, that in fact it was not perhaps airtight. All this leads back to an interview that Jim had with David Tepper from Appaloosa at the Super Bowl on Feb 1. Take a listen.
We're trying to back engineer it ourselves right now, so I think that's what you got to do is try to figure it out. Certainly ruined the environment of the setup right now, so it's brand new. So.
And what's important, I know that you talked to Joe, it was a good time, but this does, it's a game changer, isn't it?
You have to be careful because it may be a game changer, so you just got to be cautious. And 2 weeks ago, before the virus, it was one thing, and it's a different environment right now, so it is what it is.
Jim, on Twitter, you called the article strange.
Yes. Well, okay, because there's some implications in the article. One of them is that somehow Tepper might be in the inner circle with the president. I don't think you can be that because on May 15th of 2018, he called the president the father of lies, and he used an interesting term. He called him a demented, narcissistic scumbag. Now, that's usually not something that makes it so that you're close to the president. So it did sound like it's like he's getting the call. The narcissistic, I used that term once. I'm not going to use it a second time. But I get in trouble sometimes when I use these terms. But I recognize that he gets a lot of emails, whatever. But the reason why he felt compelled to say what he said to me was, you know what, I was on CNBC not long ago with talking to Joe, and I was very bullish. And since I read this Lancet article, we had both read at the same time, I feel compelled to tell the CNBC audience that I am not as bullish as I was when I was talking to Joe. Somehow this thing has become that there's this vast conspiracy of hedge fund managers who talk to Larry and get the skinny, and it's completely untrue. David Tepper, I don't know, did he get emails from Hoover? I don't know. But the idea that he was going to have some sort of tie. David, do you think the president likes those kinds of, how about when the president, when he said that Tepper said that the president gave not one dime to 9/11 or to Superstorm Sandy? These don't endear him to the president.
No, I don't believe Mr. Tepper is a supporter of the president and the idea that somehow he would be alerted to information that was available to them. By the way, Larry Kudlow, you're going to listen to, let's be honest. How many times has he come on our show? Endlessly.
He was on yesterday.
And said something.
He was on yesterday.
That the opposite of which is actually true. How many times, Jim? I know he's an old friend. Colleague. I happen to be very fond of him.
People want me to trash him. That's what they want. They've wanted.
My point is that if you are a hedge fund manager or you are anybody, I'm not necessarily sure that you're going to be listening to him and believe that whatever is being told to you is actually going to happen or be true at that moment in time.
You have to take it.
The same way he was saying that it was all contained. And then he said it again a week later when we challenged him on it.
He works for a president who listens to his every word. They have dinner a great deal together. I have said over and over again, he was my partner for 4 years. It's called loyalty. Now, does that make? I mean, as long as you disclose it.
I'd rather spend time talking about Morgan Stanley's earnings in this story. That's for sure, Carl. So hopefully we'll get to that.
I think
you soon.
Eviscerated me.
Who? Me? You?
Yeah.
Why? I mean, guys, to me, to my mind, I mean, David Tepper can take care of itself. It's what Kudlow said to our viewers who don't have that kind of intelligence.
That's
that is troublesome, Jim. I know he's
your
friend.
That's troublesome. Yeah.
We'll take
what
a break here.
Want.
Futures. Futures are weak. We'll take a break and be back in a minute.
Yes, we are standing. Look at that. I mean, we're far apart.
Yeah, you couldn't spit and hit me.
I know. If I do this, do you start?
Get the heck away from me.
I thought we might even wear masks, but it kind of at least reminds me when we were back at the exchange. It is your mad dash.
Yes.
You want to talk a little Walgreens, so let's get to it.
Okay, so one of my theses is the quarters have actually been pretty good. Take away Wells Fargo and take away Citi. We've had some really good quarters. J&J was a really good quarter. United Health was good.
Yep.
David, Walgreens was good. Walgreens. It's almost inconceivable because the Death Star just goes after Walgreens, Death Star being
Amazon.
Of course, Amazon. They made the number. I mean, 4.7% comps. They beat the revenues.
They actually had a top line that went up
2.3%.
Yeah.
Growth in the health and wellness category. David, Walgreens has a pulse. A good example of what I'm... Dow stock, by the way. I don't know how it snuck into the Dow. That was crazy.
I don't know how long that'll keep up.
Yeah,
the performance has been horrible. There'd been some talk, remember, some time back
David,
about
could he take
it private? Stefano Pessina.
Oh, Jesus, there's one of those dog things. We're like dog, like electricity. David, look at that.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst charts in the book.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And I think that the company stock is going to go higher today.
Can they maintain it? I mean, it has been a long... hard road
That's
for them.
That's a really hard question. Because
and obviously they've gone a very different strategy than has CVS, which
right.
is now a health insurer in addition to
Well,
some
I mean,
I'll
give you
things.
An example. It was Amazon Prime Day yesterday, right? So I ordered these unbelievably cool toothbrushes.
Okay.
Well, I would have gone to Walgreens for them. Right. But no, they come to my house. I don't have to touch anybody. The keypad, we know from a study, the keypad is the dirtiest thing that you can touch. I don't want the keypad. Everyone's faced with that.
But you think it goes higher, at least today and maybe for a while?
It can go higher. It's got a good dividend. It's not, they're not incompetent. Boy, that's a real... There's
a
buy Walgreens. They're not as incompetent as they used to be. Now, there's a recommendation.
This is actually not a bad shot. It's kind of weird, but it's not bad.
No, I think it's great.
Yeah.
As long as you stay away from me, I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
And when I said that you eviscerated me, I was joking around so people don't get mad. It is hard for me to criticize Larry Kudlow, but he has been wrong. He's too optimistic, and he has been too optimistic at times. But remember, that's sometimes the way leaders are. And he reflects the leader that is President Trump.
We got an opening bell just a few minutes away. Stay with us and Squawk on the Street.
Futures are weak, but plenty of other elements to watch as we take stock of some of the risk regarding COVID in Europe and some argue in the United States. Jim, it's not just futures. 10-year back to 70 basis points. German Bunds, lowest yield since March. And high yield is closing in on the 200-day once again. So a lot of elements of risk.
Jim? You listening? You hear?
Is this what happens, David, when you guys move around?
Yeah, I think nobody turned on his IFB, Carl. And I was preparing for a favor report here as we get ready for an opening bell. Of course, as you point out, now I think we're getting Jim set up, Carl.
I'm wide open and ready for business.
All right, Carl, we're going to send it back to you now while we get ourselves technically straightened out here, get the opening bell, and then we'll be ready to roll.
All right, you guys do that. In the meantime, we'll get ready for the opening bell in about 20 seconds here. As we said, watching elements of COVID. Morgan Stanley, very nice beat and some interesting comments from Gorman on the call, which we'll get to in a moment. Investment Bank up 11, Wealth Management up 38. Alcoa, United, the other big stories. And Jim, assuming you can hear me at this point, Doug McMillon on with Becky this morning talking about TikTok, stimulus, Black Friday, and the degree to which some towns are beginning to do some bulk purchasing once again, at least those that are seeing some elevated COVID cases, as breath is obviously weak here.
Yeah, Carl, we're still getting Jim ready to go. Walmart was interesting. We're keeping an eye on that stock, of course, as well. Funny, you know, didn't say much about TikTok, did he, Carl? You know, it's a name that we spoke about so often for so many days there, and then really nothing. He just talked about it sort of in broader terms in terms of the benefit of the platform, but didn't have much to offer there beyond that. But coming back to sort of the idea, Jim, of stimulus and where he stands on that.
It's so over. Right?
What do you mean?
Stimulus.
Yeah, it does seem to be.
Even that $300 billion, Carl, I mean, the $300 billion would go pretty far because we know what part of the economy is really hurting. We can target. This is no longer one of these where we just have to give it to everybody. Just give the $300 billion, which was already allocated, to the people who need it. It's stupid at this point. And it's painful. It's really painful. Carl, I've got to tell you, those are people who are just going to have tougher and tougher times because we're still not traveling to anyone. We're going to be talking about United, and we're absolutely not going out to dinner when it comes to cold weather soon. It's just going to be too cold. And the indoors, there's just not enough tables. So this is something that's going to really have a big fall off in employment in 4 weeks. Let's get ready for it.
All right, Jim, two things on your point. One is the New York Times has a story this morning about the number of people in poverty in this country grew by 8 million since May as a result of the CARES Act essentially expiring. And I don't know if you noticed, we never mentioned this. Last week, Goldman had some research on the average temperature at which demand for outdoor dining collapses.
Yeah.
And Goldman's view is that it's somewhere in the high 40s, which I think is essentially when you start to see your breath. But, I mean, without gas heaters, those who can't get those, Jim, and I know this was an issue at your business, that's going to be very difficult.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just felt, forget it. Can't do it. And what's going to happen is that all those areas that everybody set up that look so great, look like Vienna, no, are going to be gone because it doesn't matter. The heaters just don't have enough capacity. And we just feel like, you know what, Department of Transportation is against you. The health department's going to be against you. It's just a fool's errand. And the only restaurants that really are going to have the room are the chains. They can afford to be able to have very few people and get to when the vaccines happens. This money, David, this money should be given with one contingency. Until we have a vaccine, you're protected. That's what it should be done. If I were down there, I would knock these heads until we all agree that as long as there's no vaccine, they're protected. The moment they get the vaccine, they're on their own.
Right.
What do you think?
Sure. Although, again, back to when you get approval of a vaccine doesn't mean that that vaccine is going to suddenly be administered to 7 billion people on the planet.
Okay. Well, I know, but first it has to be United States.
Yes.
I'm not being a jingoistic guy.
No.
But, Carl, when we discuss it, I discussed with a very big chain yesterday about when they're going to stop, and it's going to be 3 weeks. You can't serve and expect that no one's going to show.
No, you can't. And 45 degrees is pretty cold.
See your breath.
To sit outside and eat.
No, nobody wants to do that.
I think we're going
to
try that this weekend. I'll tell you how it goes. But we'll have a giant fire next to us.
What, at a restaurant?
No, in the backyard.
I was going to say, giant fire at a restaurant doesn't
work. No, that doesn't work.
Idea.
I mean, in New York, you can set
we
all
got the
garbage
fire pit,
on
Carl.
Fire,
we bought the fire pit. It's really terrific. We have marshmallows.
Take care of two problems at once. Guys, we didn't get to Morgan Stanley, so let's quickly do it now. I mean, Jim, we mentioned it briefly at the open of the show. Return on common equity, 15%. Net revenues up 16%. We've talked so much about as well this company, Morgan Stanley, the changing complexion of its business. I mean, it's been for quite some time, of course, since they bought what they didn't already own of the Smith Barney brokerage. But it has changed even more dramatically with the closing of the transaction to acquire E-Trade, whose business, by the way, has gone up significantly since the pandemic, given the addition of so many new accounts there.
Right.
And then the announcement last week that they're also going to buy asset manager Eaton Vance. Their earnings, it's a very different picture. That said, they still are trading stocks and giving advice.
But that's
and in the capital markets, and actually had quite a strong quarter sales and trading.
Yes, they did. Now, some people feel that those assets, Carl, leave the building at the end of the day. It's been very sticky for Morgan Stanley. Gorman has really done a great job. And remember what he's doing. He's taking the E-Trade people, and he's exposing them to all sorts of good research to be able to understand better what they do. How to be able to execute trades. He's also got a lot of people in Silicon Valley. Their 401ks, he's been after that. He is trying to make this into a company that is has BlackRock-like PE. And nobody cares. One day they will care.
It's on the call today, Jim. A couple things. He says we're overcapitalized. That's the bottom line. Says that wealth management is the strongest he's seen in the 14 years he's been there. And when he was asked about the shares down pre-market, he said the market can be really stupid.
Wow. Yeah. We talk a lot about that when I speak to Mr. Gorman, about whether the market's right or whether the market's wrong. And the market's wrong about Morgan Stanley.
It may be.
And it's wrong about Goldman Sachs.
Relative to its peers, it's done quite well. It's flat for the year.
The stock's going to be up a buck and a half.
Goldman Sachs, which we've always put up as its key competitor, even though, frankly, now one is $20 billion larger in terms of market cap. Now, obviously, they closed the E-Trade deal. That added market cap. But Goldman's down about 8-9% for the year. But then you get to the big banks, and there's just been no let-up, guys, after
None.
This week of earnings. Bank America showing a little sign of life, but it's been...
City,
pretty bad. And by the
city.
Way, I look at Wells Fargo. For a while, it was inhabiting at least the $100 billion club in terms of its market value.
Right.
It's now below that. It's back to $94 billion. Stock down 57% for the year. Listen to CFO Shrewsbury on Closing Bell yesterday, Jim. I don't know if you had a chance to catch that.
Of course I did.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Downbeat. Downbeat. The market's not stupid. You didn't say that.
No.
Look,
no.
Here's the big problem with Wells, okay? You listen to the quarter. You listen to Shrewsbury. You decide what to do. And then they fire, at the end of the day, another 100 people. I mean, did you see that? That outrageous thing? I mean, why wasn't that on the conference call? I mean, they're like, oh, let's go fire 100 people. What is going on there?
You have a very high opinion of Charlie Scharf.
I do, but geez, what kind of company did he have? 100 workers, they abused the USAID. I mean, what is going on? What is the culture there? And how long has it really been like this? This was the best bank in America. I thought. I was wrong.
Well, it is down across the board in banking, except for Morgan Stanley, which is up ever so slightly.
Morgan Stanley's not a bank. It's a wealth advisor.
It's true.
Okay?
That's
not a bank.
That's a good point.
There, that's what Gorman wants me to say, and I said it.
We should probably not include it any longer in
right.
that.
If Gorman were on, right, if Gorman were on our air where he should be, because he's not overexposed, and if this is a great opportunity, I think he could have said that we're no longer a bank.
Who do we compare it to? UBS? BlackRock? I don't know. Like what?
BlackRock. I like the BlackRock. Now, he doesn't run these index funds, but
no,
I like the BlackRock.
Kind of
BlackRock's got a 20 multiple. Let's put him somewhere between BlackRock and Bank of America.
Okay.
How about that?
Sounds good to me.
You like that?
Sure.
Stock will be much higher.
Guys,
and that's not just because Gorman's a nice guy. I'm not like that, David.
No, you're not.
Scharf's not that nice. Larry Kudlow is nice. Nice per share. Carl, there we go. I'm working on a nice per share index. I was nasty when I was at the hedge fund.
Yeah, you were.
I had bad nasty.
Yeah, you were always nice to me, though. Pretty nice.
I always liked you.
Yeah, you were okay.
My dad liked you.
Never got too mad at me.
No.
Guys, I want to talk Tiffany and actually one other situation. Yeah, we'll call it a fake.
You're going to talk about Peloton, the lawsuit?
No, not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about Tiffany because they gave us results this morning. Why? Well, because they wanted to front run LVMH, their would-be buyer, which we're going to hear from momentarily in terms of the results from that giant luxury goods company. But Tiffany's results were only for really where we stand right now for this period, right? Global net sales for a two-month period. They did decline year over year, but operating earnings, Tiffany tells us, were up 25% year over year. 25% is what they say. Now, again, they're still seeing sales declines here in the U.S. Let's keep that in mind. And by the way, they also will tell us about e-commerce. It is growing quite quickly, but it's growing in part as a percentage of sales because the overall sales number is not as high as it had been. So it wouldn't be quite as high a number in terms of doubling from what it was a year ago at roughly 6% to 13%. Nonetheless, e-commerce is becoming a more important component of their overall business. Why are they telling us all this? Well, the main reason they're telling us all this is because they want to make it clear that in their opinion, there is no way that there has been a material adverse effect on their business, which is one of the key arguments being made by LVMH as the two sides sue each other in Delaware court.
Okay.
Their claim at Tiffany is simply, hey, you know what? All your claims don't matter, right? You say that there was no carve-out for a pandemic. You say that you got some letter from the French Foreign Ministry, which is going to prevent you from closing the deal until after January 6th. And you say there's a material adverse effect. Here is their counterclaim from Tiffany, which was filed yesterday. Quote, ignoring the actual words in the merger agreement, LVMH's argument is based primarily on the absence of an explicit exclusion for pandemics in the agreement's definition of material adverse effect. LVMH's heavy reliance on the absence of an express carve-out for pandemics, an argument they say is devoid of support in case law, underscores how weak their claim is, but the court need not even reach the various exclusions from the MAE definition for the simple reason Tiffany has not suffered an MAE. That was yesterday. Today they follow it up with this release, giving us the numbers, which in their opinion say very simply, Jim, we are doing better than we did a year ago in terms of our profits.
Look at the China numbers are incredible. China's fantastic. They're starting to do better in the e-com. And, you know, look, it's true. You don't expect a lot of e-com. But I have to admit that I'm impressed.
And the question then becomes, as now Bernard Arnault has been, I believe, subpoenaed to be deposed on November 20th, the question becomes, does this present an opportunity for the two sides to finally get something done? Does he really want to be deposed? Does he really want to be put on the stand in Delaware, as would be the case in early January? November 24th, by the way, is when they can walk away ostensibly, but they still will have to go to court. And if a judge orders specific performance, they're still going to have to buy them at $135 a share. A lot of, ARBs are in this stock believing that you will get a deal at a far higher price, perhaps even at the 135 number that originally was agreed to, because they don't believe that the case merits much in terms of at least LVMH saying there wasn't a carve-out for a pandemic, this is an MAE, and we can't do it because of the French Foreign Ministry. That said, we don't know what could come from Macron. Maybe he says he'll continue to help his friend Bernard Arnault.
He should focus on COVID. David, do you know the lag trade that Matthew Boss came up with?
No.
Okay, L Brands.
Yeah.
American Eagle Outfitters.
Yeah.
Gap. All doing better than expected.
Right.
They're all in the mall. What is the case against Tiffany if it's in the mall? See, we hated the mall for a while.
Yeah.
Mall's making a comeback.
Mall's making a comeback.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Real quickly, I wanted to get to Navistar. It's another M&A situation we've been covering. Remember, Trayton, the unit of Volkswagen, has wanted to buy that company. They've been back and forth for quite some time. There are large shareholders there in the form of Carl Icahn and Mark Trzaski. Trayton also owns around 16%. They kind of all own the same. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, they hit the market with saying 43, take it or leave it. You have until 6 o'clock Friday to decide. 6 p.m. Friday. Mm-hmm. You can see what's happened to that stock. It got crushed yesterday. It is down yet again today. There's been some talk about Trzaski and Icahn and whether they're butting heads and one would take a deal and the other wouldn't. I'm hearing they may not be as far apart in terms of being on the same page. The question is, with these kinds of personalities, could you really hope to get to the finish line? I'm not sure if Navistar has put anything out this morning in terms of a response. I was told they might. I haven't actually checked. I forgot to do that. But this guy, Trzaski, Mark, Jim, have you followed him at all? Because through the years, he's just a guy who doesn't like to sell. He doesn't like to sell in Navistar. He didn't like to sell in Lionsgate.
Right.
Take a look at a five-year Lionsgate and take a look at a five-year Loral. These, again, are two other situations where he was a very significant owner of stock. There were potential deals that were out there that he could have hit the bid on, chose not to, and, man, he just doesn't like to sell, and anybody aligned with him is probably unhappy with that decision.
Well, now
in both cases,
is turning.
It would have been wise to have
truck business is turning.
Yeah. Trayton really wants this. The asset makes sense for them, for VW, but they wanted it at 43. Many people thought perhaps they'd be willing to go to a higher number in the 40s. We'll find out tomorrow. Carl, back over to you.
All right, guys. As you're talking, the Biden campaign says that two people who've recently traveled with Senator Harris have tested positive for COVID. They say Harris was not in close contact, but she is canceling her travel through Sunday, the 18th. We'll keep our eye on that. In the meantime, all sectors red, led lower by energy. Only one Dow stock is green. That's Walgreens. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
Tough morning. 10-1 declining to advancing stocks at the open. So there's nothing really working right now, although we're off of the lows. Just take a look at sectors. When you say nothing's working, when you get semiconductors not moving along with the cyclicals like energy and industrials, banks still not doing anything, even though the bank earnings have been great, except for Wells Fargo. Even consumer staples, defensive sectors like healthcare are also not doing much. The reopening stocks all down, but frankly, everything is down. So the reopening stuff, you've got the travel stocks, like the airlines are weak, the energy stocks are weak, materials and steel stocks like Nucor weak, the industrials generally. You get the point here, folks? Nothing's really working today here. Normally, you flee to mega cap. That's the sort of knee-jerk reaction when you don't get great news on the vaccine or the reopening story. That's not really working as well. Of course, these stocks have held up tremendously in the last month and really in the last year. So nothing's working today here. So remember, let's remind ourselves what moves the markets and what the story is right now. So stimulus, let's call it dimming hopes. That's being kind, frankly. But the reopening, fresh restrictions in Europe and in the United States. Vaccine treatment news has been mixed recently. Earnings have been improving, but the bottom line is we're off to a good start. On earnings. That's the good news. 41 companies reporting, 8% of the S&P 500 overall right now, 85% above expectations, 29% are the average beat. That is a huge number. So great start to earnings season. Here's the conundrum. I call it the earnings conundrum. Even though third quarter and even the fourth quarter numbers are looking good, large earnings beats may already be priced in. We had a huge run up in the first half of October on all of this news. We've been reporting all of this here. The guidance we're expecting, we're hoping to come from companies, I don't think it's going to come. I think the corporations are really constrained by the reopening story, by the vaccine story, and the stimulus story. So there's a sort of collar around the market right now on that guidance that you need from the companies. Finally, I just want to note something. A very famed value investor, Ted Aronson, very well known as a quant, an investor in value, is closing his shop. $10 billion. It was $30 billion. You know, David, this may be one of those bell-ringing moments. He was very respected in the markets. And I don't know if it highlights the bottom of the trade, guys, but very important here. And you can see value just has been underperforming growth for years and years. Back to you.
All right, Bob, we'll see in a little while. Obviously, yields are a story both here and in Europe. Rick Santelli's got more on that one on another day of Fed speak. Hey, Rick.
Absolutely. And Carl, you raise a great point. We could all say that the correlations might not be one-to-one, but they are there. no matter what sovereign you look at, whether it's in Italy, whether it's Boons, whether it's treasuries, they continue to move lower. All we're debating is the speed at which it's occurring. Here's a week to date of tens, acknowledging we were closed on Monday, and you can see that the drip continues for lower yields. But when you look towards Europe, the drip is much more aggressive, as you see a three-day chart of the Boons there. They're at minus 62. That's a seven-month low should they close there. And the distance between our yields and their yields is now at a three-month wide, right around 133 basis points. And if you open the chart up for Boons to early March, you can see that seven-month drop-off there. And it may continue as COVID hotspots, of course, multiply in Europe. Their currency is reflecting that. Look at a 1 week of the euro currency and then open it month to date. We're at the lowest level of the month for the currency. And, of course, this is propelling the dollar index to higher levels. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right, Rick, thank you very much. So we got some broad-based selling across the board. S&P's back to about a one-week low as all sectors are red and the VIX back above 28. Take a break here. Be back in a minute.
Not everyone's in the same camp. I mean, there are people that are still being at home more, spending money on their home and doing things to redecorate and those kinds of things. But there are other people that are struggling paycheck to paycheck if they have a paycheck. And so many people are unemployed that we're seeing that pressure as well. So it's really a spectrum. You know, it always is. But this moment in time has more separation in it in terms of how people are feeling and behaving than we would normally see.
That's Doug McMillon of Walmart on Squawk Box earlier this morning, Jim. One reason, given that view of the consumer, why he thinks getting something together, anything really, regarding stimulus is important and key.
Yes. I mean, there are some people who are doing so well, and they're not spending that much, and the defaults are much lower than we thought. Their balance sheets were good. They have jobs. This is a great moment because they're really not spending a lot because of the pandemic. And then there are other people who are just hanging on by their fingers. And it seems like the country doesn't realize that they work at stores and restaurants. It is so not their fault. And we're supposed to be a compassionate country. And it really is ridiculous that we have leaders who will not provide $300 billion to these people at those jobs, who will not be able to have I mean, this is like Bob Cratchit. There will not be a turkey on Thanksgiving for these people. It is just outrageous.
I think everybody knows what you mean, Jim. Obviously, we're headed into a difficult period. We'll take a break here. We did get a swoosh lower on the Dow. Session low at the open was down 332. We're off of that. Back after a break. Jim, what's on Mad tonight?
Controversial. Sorrento. S-R-N-E. One of those stocks that the Robin Hoodies, who are geniuses and I love them, trade aggressively. Let's watch that. By the way, when we're 10 to 1 down to up, our late friend Mark Haynes always said, you must buy.
That's generally been a pretty good rule, Jim. We'll see you tonight.
Okay.
Mad Money, of course, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.